Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast. Man, you would really think at this point I'd be used to starting without a quote, but I'm not. So here's episode 440 of the White Book. Also, I've not been keeping simultaneous numbers on Props and Slops. This has got to be like 15 or something, right?
Yeah, it's way more than that. But I'm also a pretty big fan of that Pat Day gave us like a better way to do this. And we were like, we should do that. And then immediately went back to doing things our same busted way.
Yep. I mean, as soon as we had that huge discussion, I was like, yeah, I guess we could, but that's a lot more work.
We'd have to plan and try and organize, or we could just get together and talk for an hour.
That sounds much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you're listening, just know we're doing this because we like to, not for you. No offense.
Exactly. At this point, it is all just to have an excuse for us to ramble. It is not for us.
His idea was great, too. Like, we would have, like, been able to, like, yeah, oh, well. if anyone wants a written podcast today that's likely to be really successful, let us know.
Yeah, hey, I'm not going to totally rule it out. Like, I want to keep that door open for us, but...
For one day when we suddenly all have free time in our mid to late 30s to devote to a podcast? Yeah, that seems likely.
Yeah, that happens all the time to random, like, suburban and urbanite folks, right?
Well, I mean, there's the possibility Roy will have real summers now, that, like, one summer we're like, let's try to be serious.
It just with this kind of stuff, it's just about getting ahead. Once you get ahead and you build up steam, it becomes second nature.
Once it's the new routine, normal. Basically.
Yeah. You just need one of us would actually need to like get it in to them that they want to make it organized and run it. And then
I'll tell you what. Around Christmas break, because I'm gonna go stir crazy. Right, like, because I'm like, this is the weirdest, hardest working year of my life, so I'm gonna not be able to fully turn off. I'll organize us, so we'll redo this then.
We can revisit then. That sounds good.
Yeah,
I mean, if there's
that might be a good way to kick off the new year, you know?
Yeah, new year, new show. Oh, also, the concept W, R, and A all work for like the different categories that we're doing.
What would the A be then?
You can just make it action.
Okay.
Or G for game.
Yeah, but then it's not our initials.
Well, Glazer.
Oh,
how often? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess we do call you Glazer more often.
Yeah.
I do. Roy calls you Aaron pretty often.
Yeah, I hate it. He's the only one left. Like, even Carla barely says it anymore. I don't know. Actually, no, that's not fair. Roy calls me Glazer in groups fairly often.
It's true. I mostly call him Aaron one-on-one or when we're being serious or I'm mad at him.
Well, let's just say, remember how we told you listeners this wasn't for you? We know you don't care about this.
That's true.
I don't even care about this. I was only half following the conversation. When I heard my name, I was paying attention.
Oh, man.
So. What are you thinking about how I was going to open this beer. That's why you guys are talking. That's my beer opener's in the other room.
I did not do my usual beer check before we actually started recording. Normally, I give you guys one last opportunity. Do you need another beer? I didn't do it.
Hey, man, I got 9 NBFCs waiting for me. Let's talk about WandaVision.
All right, cool. We'll talk about this thing that Glazer has not watched because I don't know why he doesn't.
Oh, I can explain. So I don't watch trailers if I know I already want to watch the thing. The point of a trailer to me is it's an advertisement. I don't need to know what a thing I'm already going to see is going to be about because I'm going to see it. Like if I'm alive and I have the ability, there's zero chance of me not watching WandaVision. So all the trailer does is give me expectations that the show might or might not live up to or dash hopes that the show might or might not. So I'll just watch going cold and figure it out on my own. I do that with literally all trailers.
But you're going to have those expectations whether you do watch the trailer. Sorry, you will have expectations whether you do watch the trailer or not. I don't feel like watching a trailer like negates that. It may shift what my expectations are, but I'm going to have them regardless. So I would rather use it as a hype vehicle and be like, oh, sweet, look at that costume they're showing off or whatever.
I mean, my expectations are I want to see this and I hope it's good. Like, a lot of why I like watching things is I like the structure of stories and like trying to figure out where they're going and like predicting and messing with things. And like the trailer doesn't add to that expectation or really take, it's there. It's a thing that exists. It's an extra 3 minutes of my life to do a thing that doesn't change anything about my life. So I just don't do it. Like I already have 8,000 games of Magic to play that don't affect anything in my life and waste all my time.
Yeah, but the trailer is 3 minutes, and trust me, you can watch the trailer at the same time you play a game of Magic.
I mean,
or you can watch it while you're taking a shit, which is what I did. So
I guess. But then, when am I going to scroll through Twitter?
While you're supposed to be working?
Oh, you should probably just not be on Twitter.
When I'm shitting? Oh yeah,
I think you'll enjoy life a lot more if you replace that with trailer watching.
That's fair. That's fair.
Your blood pressure would certainly be better. Most
exactly. But
I guess since I don't know, talking about the trailer too much might be spoilers for Aaron, and we don't want to be too.
Oh, I don't care. You can spoil shit. I don't actually mind spoilers like at all.
I thought we decided this is a spoiler full podcast.
I know, but we do try to sometimes respect the other co-hosts at least, right?
Yeah, you don't have to respect me about this. I don't generally mind. Spoilers, unless it's something huge, and I'm assuming that's not in a trailer to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, well,
it's based off the Vision comic
and House of Man.
Oh, I hate House of Man.
Well, no, like the basic concept, right, is that Wanda is creating an alternate reality, right?
Oh,
like,
Well, I do that, yes.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So
that was obvious. Like, that's the alternate reality, the alternate reality she creates ends up being the Vision comic, more or less.
Yeah, but instead of it being about Vision, it looks like it's going to be about Wanda or the journey that.
So I actually hate these characters, but I'm willing to watch anyway because I'm a nerd.
What? I mean, I have some complicated feelings about Vision and Scarlet Witch. I love old 70s Vision and Scarlet Witch.
So
I've
always hated Vision. One of the first comics I ever read and didn't like was the Vision and Scarlet Witch miniseries, which was just ridiculous and melodramatic. It felt like it wanted to be X-Men, and Wanda might as well just be Wanda Ex Machina.
I mean, thank you, Bendis.
I mean, at this point, yeah, definitely.
Like, I don't need Wanda ever again. She was fine. She was okay. She was never, like, my favorite. But, like, she had the 70s character problem of being hysterical woman who has all the power but passes out, like, Invisible Girl, right? But...
Yeah, they kind of fixed that with Sue, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, they did fix that with Sue. Sue's one of my favorite characters now, but they didn't fix it with Wanda. They turned her into a fucking walking plot device.
Well, the hashtag thank you, Bendis. Like, I think that the Bendis years were really unkind to Scarlet Witch.
No one's made her better since. Wherever she shows up, she's like, she angst over her plot device days.
Over being Bendis, being the wrong kind of favorite Bendis character. Not the not Luke Cage, right? Luke Cage came out of the Bendis years looking amazing, and Wanda came out looking like, not... A character that can probably not be fixed for another generation. I think the movies have mostly fixed her, though. I think they walk a pretty good balance between taking some elements of the Bendis stuff and streamlining.
She just doesn't have enough personality.
Exactly. She's just really flat. She's obviously been a secondary character at best through the whole MCU. So she honestly is almost still a blank slate, I feel.
Yeah, they didn't establish her relationship with Vision, right? Like, it happens almost entirely off screen.
Yeah, which made it super weird.
Like, he's, like, stalking her in one movie, and then the next time we see them, they're dating.
Wait, is he stalking her in a movie?
Well, the feels that way because you don't see any of the lead up to it. It feels very awkward.
Yeah.
Are we talking about in Civil War? He's supposed to be stalking her? Like, because it goes Ultron, Civil War.
Yeah, he keeps, like, walking through walls and looking in on her, and she's like, get out, stop doing that, I told you not to do that. That seems stalkery to me.
Yeah. Well, no, but I don't know, I just watched Civil War. It's not, I don't know, I don't think the context you're supposed to take away is stalkery.
Well, that's the context I got.
That's what I got, too.
Which is fair. I mean, look, I could be misreading it, but I don't know.
What we just got is Roy Whitman on a la pooping a lot.
Any relation on screen, and we just don't see any of that.
I think they try pretty hard to sell it to you in Infinity War, and they do it.
It's one scene.
They told, but they didn't show right. Just right at the end, they were like, "Hey, by the way, these characters are like super in love." Okay, bye.
Yeah,
I actually think it was a big mistake to dust her, actually, because that could have given you time for her to mourn Vision and you to buy more into it, but
that would have helped. That would have.
I guess they might have been like, why is it Wanda using her powers to redo?
Well, that's not her power in the MCU anyway, right? Like, she's not a reality warper.
Oh, we don't know. I mean, she is. We just don't.
Well, yeah. It appears to be on the much smaller early comic scale.
Right.
I mean, we'll see, right? Like, it's setting up this, you know, multiverse of madness thing that's supposed to be Doctor Strange. I think the trailer overall for me, I think, was a pretty good proof of concept, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mean, the main thing about this trailer is, like, there had been so little Marvel news since Corona started that I was off my bullshit. Like, I used to check the Marvel spoiler subreddit more frequently than I should ever admit. I would follow the stuff.
All we've had for months was S.H.I.E.L.D., and no one but me was paying attention to that.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter.
Quantum Zone, it connected.
Throwing daggers at that show, my sister's a huge Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan, so throwing daggers at that show is something that
probably should have.
Cloak and Dagger, that's another show that I loved that didn't get nearly enough.
Look, Runaways. I liked Runaways, and it kind of
could not watch it. They have too much parents. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would have been a really good show if they had bothered to hire actors who were actually good at acting.
I think that's a little unfair.
Oh my god, it was the most. I only watched the first season and then was done. But like, the acting in that first season was abysmal.
I don't think so. Abysmal.
It was pretty just generic, especially early. Because several of the characters were intended to be generic. But, I mean, you have, you know, near literal Mulan in the show. Like, Mina has the history with her. She's great. You've got Ian DeCastecker, who is phenomenal. And I do admit,
Greg is a pretty good actor.
The acting in that movie is so bad, they should roll it up to the gates of Troy, and it would be let in.
Oh man!
All right, talk about this trailer, because I've derailed the shit out of you guys.
Hey, I can bring it back around. I can actually. So S.H.I.E.L.D. by the end of the show is being shown as being reestablished in a lot of ways. There's a helicarrier again. There's some forces in space that are unidentified, right? And we had at the end of Spider-Man Far From Home, Fury in space with some forces that were kind of unidentified. Well, weren't there some humans as well, though?
I'd have to rewatch. I mean, I'm all... Although, actually, you can't easily rewatch the Spider-Man ones, right? Because they're on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I don't think so. Or maybe just Homecoming is. But regardless, all signs seem to be pointing towards S.W.O.R.D., and we do see in the WandaVision trailer some forces kind of rushing in to, like, surround something. I forget now, since I watched the trailer, what it was they were surrounding. But so rumor mill seems to be saying that is S.W.O.R.D. forces coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a lot of people were thinking that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would set up S.W.O.R.D. at the end.
Yeah.
But that ended up not being the case.
I mean, it lightly did. If the movies choose to run with it, then it is vague enough. Nothing is necessarily conflict.
So literally the entire history of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. summed up in a sentence.
Literally the entire history of most comic books. I still don't understand why this bugs so many people in the MCU.
No, it doesn't bug me. Like, I've got, it's not something that particularly bugs me. I just think that it's one of those things where you can read into it what you want to read into it, is what I guess would be the best way to say about it. Looking for a direct one-to-one correlation, it's just not gonna happen. I mean, you barely get one-to-one correlations in the main movies.
Right,
so,
right. So that's why the show stuff never bothered me. Between that and Netflix and whatever, you know, I don't expect each issue of the Fantastic Four to be telling me what Wolverine's up to that week. So
it will, because Wolverine's guest starring, because they want to raise the sales.
So. Yeah, that was a really bad idea of me to choose Wolverine. I should have gone with maybe Gambit.
No, well, no, wait, is it 1990s? Gambit folks, right, care, you can clearly tell that Will grew up in the 90s, because he just named the two most frequent guest stars besides Spider-Man. In the 90s, in Marvel Comics, it would basically be like issue one set up the thing. Issue two was a guest appearance by Spider-Man. Issue three was a guest appearance by Wolverine. And then if sales hadn't picked up, like maybe issue five would be Gambit. Because that would be.
You definitely could not tell I was just looking at the 90s X-Men cartoon on Disney Plus before recording.
All right, we're well away from this. Anyway, the trailer's worth watching if you're interested. It's a good proof of concept. I think it shows that the show's core concept of Wanda creating these alternate realities that are parodies of sitcoms, I think is going to end up being more than just comedy and have resonance, and looks really, really well done. So, and it looks like it has movie-quality special effects. So
that's also pretty cool. They've said that's been the goal of these Disney Plus series, right?
Yeah, but this is the first one that we've seen, like, really actually use special effects, right? Because the special effects for the Winter Soldier stuff we've seen is all, you know.
Punchy-kicky,
yeah. No flying robots and changing from black and white and all kinds of stuff.
I think, judging by The Mandalorian, probably would have been a pretty good baseline to guess off of, though. I mean, and this does look in line with that.
Well, apparently they're using Mandalorian technology from the Mandalorian, excuse me, to do Doctor Strange and Thor 4. So,
oh, nice. Yeah. That tech has been, I think, a big step up in making things feel more grounded. I don't know. To have that appropriate weight that a lot of CG stuff feels kind of off about.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize until I read an article about it that they weren't filming on location.
That
none of it was filmed on location. Like, I thought that some of it wasn't, but I didn't realize that literally all of it was done in the UK. Yeah. Almost all of it.
Crazy. So,
anyway, that starts up, by the way, in a month.
Yeah.
And so what's next on our list here?
I threw one in while we were talking, just to connect to there. I was seeing new rumors about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, that evidently talks have been going with guest appearance by Tom Cruise. And so basically the rumors seem to be saying that Marvel is pushing to get a handful of actors in that had been like almost cast as original Avengers in order to be multiversal counterparts of the Avengers we are familiar with. And Tom Cruise was famously in the running for Iron Man. So.
Thank God.
Yeah.
He was not Iron Man.
So it would be interesting. I don't think I would have wanted him for, you know, 9 movies. Granted, he probably wouldn't have gotten 9 movies. But if I get like half an hour of him as Iron Man in a Doctor Strange movie, you know, I'm intrigued enough to check that out.
I don't think with the pandemic that Disney can afford Tom Cruise for half an hour. So I think that you may get like 15 minutes. You know, they sadly took on all this debt to buy a bunch of bad movies and the X-Men back, but it's going to take them years to do X-Men movies. So they're going to, it's going to take a while before they can make that money back. So I think with the pandemic.
That's true.
And people really not liking Mulan. Like,
yeah,
really not liking Mulan.
Hey, I hear they made it a superhero movie, but I did not watch.
I have not watched.
I have not either.
The influencers who would convince me to do that all turned against the movie. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll save my $30 for, I hope enough people do it that they'll do it for Black Widow, because that I'll buy for $30. That I'll spend $30 on.
Well, I mean,
yeah, I think it might.
Yeah,
it would probably. I would snap do it. Like,
but they would do it for $50, right?
Oof. Man, I hope not, but maybe.
This is Disney, right? Like, are we acting like we don't know how Disney works?
Although they can also just release Hamilton like 6 months early, like they did.
Yeah, that was their one moment of kindness.
Disney taketh.
That was Disney giving you a taste.
Oh yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I don't believe any Doctor Strange rumors until we get some kind of reality.
Yeah, I mean, like they're just in pre-production now, like ending pre-production soon. I think Cumberbatch is got to start filming soon.
Nice, I know Rami. They have to replan a lot of the stuff going on, given the prominence Black Panther was supposed to have in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's
a good bit.
Yeah, that's a really sad tragedy. I'm still not kind of a point to think about what Black Panther 2 will look like.
Well, yes. I'm not specifically talking about that. I just think that will automatically throw, unless they knew this was coming, throw plans into a tizzy. And it's also possible that they knew this was coming.
But I would imagine that they probably knew he was sick, right? Because he had to be insured.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So, and, you know, he would have been going to doctors and stuff, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, but he was an intensely, like, private man. Like, I mean, he was not public that he was married. So
yeah, that's fair. That's a good point.
But can you keep that from Disney? Can you keep cancer from Disney's like insurance people? That's a whole different level. Like the paparazzi is one thing, but Disney's insurance people, that's a whole different level of surveillance state. That's up there with like the NSA.
That's true.
There's a reason why they don't let Johnny Depp hasn't made a movie in a while.
This slightly horrible tangent aside, a very horrible tangent aside, Phil, what's the social dilemma?
So the social dilemma is a new Netflix documentary. Actually, borders on docudrama. They also have it interspersed with some live action drama stuff. But it is an interesting show. I don't think it's anything by and large that was news to me, but it did reinforce a lot of things that I've harped about to other people over the last, probably a few years, but definitely much harder over the last, say, 2 years or so. But basically boils down to Silicon Valley is out of control. Go figure, right? Yeah. And, you know, the sheer level of control that has been turned over to algorithms and the way they are designed to play, you know, people like fiddles, so to speak. From pushing interaction on something like Facebook to giving you that intermittent reward, similar to pulling a slot machine, where you refresh the app. Oh, do I have a new like? Do I not? You don't know, but you keep coming back. Maybe sometimes you have the reward, sometimes you don't. Things like, if you search for, say, climate change is the top suggested search results will be wildly different depending on the profile it has built for you or where you are physically located, things like that, which, you know, these type of things then combine to really exacerbate both the bubbles we live in, because we literally live in our own individualized online bubbles. No matter how much you and your buddy think the two of you see and know the same things, you don't. So, yeah, if you have not started to get into that type of thing, I do actually recommend you take a look at The Social Dilemma. It's not like I'm going to go, you know, shut down my Facebook account tomorrow sort of thing. But I have definitely, you know, last year I took a break, took Facebook off my phone for all of Lent, and that was extremely refreshing. I switched to Firefox for my browser a long time ago, looking at swapping to Quant for my search engine of choice. I really recommend that people don't just passively consume the technological marvels of our world, but that they do spend some time wrangling them into working for you instead of you working for them. I feel like I soapboxed that more than I was really planning on originally. My bad.
Yeah, I mean, social media got very bad for me a few months ago. So I deleted Twitter from my phone, which ended up being pretty good.
I don't blame you there.
And then I ended up reinstalling it because I ended up just eventually, like, something happened that I needed to be checking Twitter regularly. I think a new episode of the history podcast that I do was going on. And I was checking the replies and responding to people, and then it just spiraled from there. So it yeah. But I think the thing about social media in general is, as awful as it is, most of the impulses that it aren't that that people use for it aren't new. And the way, and like, I think people sometimes have a tendency to pathologize. There we go. Some like impulses and say, you know, like selfies or something that, you know, 50 years ago, the greatest generation wouldn't have done, or 100 years ago, people wouldn't have done. But if you look at similar behaviors, human beings have been doing similar behaviors to things you find on the internet throughout much of our history. So the medium is not really the message in many cases. I mean, that's not excusing. I think that's a separate issue from Facebook's political and social power, which I think is far too much, or Twitter's. But I think, you know, if you can read the news story that just came out about Zuckerberg, I would definitely suggest you do that. I think it's in Rolling Stone. Excuse me. Might be in The Atlantic. About him and his cozy relationship with the Trump administration. I think you can definitely see the political power of tech companies. I mean, obviously Jeff Bezos, who could feed every person in America and solve the COVID unemployment crisis and still be able to be one of the richest men in the world. You know, they're all too powerful, but human beings have been doing a lot of the kind of things they do on the internet since we invented writing.
All right, welcome to Roy's Progressive 101.
Yeah.
We're going to start really going down a non-entertainment related rabbit hole, but I'll just say that the advances of technology have allowed those type of behaviors to be intentionally abused much more pervasively and much more quickly than at any other time in human history. So,
well, fair. I mean, we're intimately more connected than any time before, right? All forms of the increasing speed of communication that's existed since the telegraph was invented. Again, I'm just turning this into a history class, so I'll stop.
Yeah,
but I'll just stop.
Functionally, my one statement is our brains weren't built to specifically handle this level of information. And I think that is, like, our brains are absolutely not built to handle conspiracy theories. Oh, and the sheer amount of information combined with that, I think, is the problem. I don't think that problem is distinct to social media. I think social media exacerbates it in a very real way. And that, in all likelihood, some very real censorship that's going to make people uncomfortable is a necessity to protect our cognitive facilities. Faculties or facilities?
The brain issues are definitely something that they talk about in the Social Dilemma documentary. One thing that I wish that it did more of that it doesn't, it harps several times that deeper regulation outside of what the companies themselves promise they will do is required, but it does not spend any time positing on any particular route or possibilities whatsoever, which I feel like is a real drop ball unless they're planning on dropping the Social Dilemma 2 on us next year.
If that's successful enough.
If you're interested in these kind of questions, particularly...
You should ask who's watching The Watchmen and transition to the next subject.
Hold on.
I was messing with him. Go ahead.
So the podcast Reply All, the September 18th episode about QAnon, and it looks at the founder of 8chan and looks at sort of those two, the rise and then fall of 8chan and then continuing rise of QAnon is really... really well explored and really explored with a lot of nuance.
Which episode is this? Sorry.
This is episode 166. It's called Country of Liars on the podcast Reply All. I would definitely listen to it. It got a lot of ads, like a lot of overproduced podcasts do, but the interviews are really good and it's really insightful into the origins of QAnon. And I think, and they interview the kid, he's like 22 still, who... founded 8chan when he was like 18 or whatever, or even younger. And he says that like one of the big mistakes of the early internet that he grew up on was unbridled free speech being a positive good in and of itself, and that just people being able to say whatever they want in any context at any time is, you know, ends up being a very toxic way to live our public life. And there's a lot of other interesting things in there. And so if you're interested in QAnon and how it grabbed hold of our society and some of the forces behind why it, I would definitely recommend that. And it ties into our discussion.
Okay. I watched and we're done with serious things now. I watched The Watchmen.
Yeah. The Zack Snyder movie.
The Zack Snyder movie. I should have just read the comic.
You should have. Definitely should have.
It was definitely trying really hard to be the comic.
Until it wasn't.
Until the very end. I mean, I didn't hate the change at the end at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, that update I thought was perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It works insofar as the comic is really damn good and it's doing the same thing. I'm not sure that it succeeds as a movie. Like, it took us like 3 days to get through the one movie. So like, it was so boring. But we want to start the Watchmen series, so we'll report back on that relatively soon here.
I would just skip straight to the Watchmen series. It's not even tied to the movie.
Carla's gonna have 7,000 questions, and I just want her to have so this was a comic before, right? And like, now she's seen the movie. We should be set. We can watch.
You know, she knows who Dr. Manhattan is.
Yes, exactly. And his big blue penis. Yes.
Oh, God. I remember reaching some point in that movie. I think it was when Silk Spectre, right? That's the Black Henry stand-in. Is on Mars with Dr. Manhattan. And I remember scrolling down to see how much was left in the movie. And there was still 90 more minutes left in the movie. And I was like, fuck, I don't want to watch any more of this. It's so plotting, and it's in love with itself, and it's in love with the source material, and it's in love with its ability to adapt the source material in a way that's just like
adapt isn't he's just such a like ugh.
It's just you want to take a shower after you watch the movie, and not because like any particular
it feels sweaty. It feels like a sweaty movie. Carl and I have this consistent fight whenever we watch anything. She loves to stare at her phone for 10 minutes at a time and then look up and be like, what did I miss? Wait, why did that happen? Yeah. And then I like, so like as we watch, I'm kind of like, pay attention. In the middle of Watchmen, I just gave up, and I was like, you know what? Your phone's got to be more interesting than this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so you started looking at her phone then?
I usually have my phone handy. I definitely spend more time on the phone than I usually do.
Phones go right back to my social dilemma entry.
Fair. But that's right back on his soapbox.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder is the worst. I can't wait for all of you to watch the Snyder Cut and then be like, I can't believe I watched that. It was so terrible. Well, I don't watch it, and my brain is slightly better for it.
I'll probably give in, I suppose, maybe. I don't know.
Probably will too.
I still haven't even watched Batman versus Superman or the Whedon cut. So
I've never made it through Batman versus Superman. It's the movie I think I've tried to watch the most. I've tried to watch it starting at different points. No one's in anything resembling the character I would expect for them.
Yeah.
And I can't. I hate them all so much. I hate that movie. It's one of my like five least favorite movies ever.
They almost get there with Superman in that movie by the end. They almost get there.
I've never made it that far, so I'll just take your word for it.
Almost get there. They don't get there. Like, he never gets there. But he, like, you can see Zack Snyder kind of like coming around to it by the end of the movie.
I've long said I might have liked Man of Steel if they just named it something else. If it was just like, yeah, this is the Supreme movie, I would have been fine.
It's
not a great movie then, right?
It would have made a great Hyperion movie.
It no longer infuriates me.
Yeah.
As long as you don't call the movie where Jonathan Kent is yelling at his son to not help people.
And not save him. Let's not forget that.
That makes it so clear he understood nothing.
Yeah, like it's at that exact moment I was like, oh, this isn't like this never gets better, huh?
Literally never gets better. Like, there's just like so much about the Snyder DC universe that is just so frustrating in retrospect. I guess it's not retrospect, it's coming back to us. I think Henry Cavill is a perfectly fine Superman.
I think he was great. I don't think he was fine. I think he was genuinely excellent. Like, there's just, he's not playing Superman.
Yeah.
Like, the 2 seconds he gets to play Superman in each movie, he's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you look at Witcher, like, you see that, like, Henry Cavill clearly cares about the source material and is trying really hard. And Witcher gives him material that's, like, really trying to dig into the source material and adapt it and take the good elements and kind of try to leave some of the bad elements behind. And that makes it so good. And then, as Glazer said, you see it in some points. But even, like, Ben Affleck could have been a good Batman. Amy Adams could have been an amazing Lois Lane. And there are definitely moments in Batman versus Superman and Man of Steel where you're like, wow, why are they wasting like this woman's talents? Like, she is one of the best actresses of her generation. And they're like literally, and she's trying. She's not Natalie Portman. Like, she is trying.
A great comparison movie.
It's impressive. Just such a waste.
When the CW does like better renditions of these characters, right? The CW can give like Tyler Hoechlin a better.
I want to be completely clear. There is no worse version of Superman. There's worse versions of Batman. There are no worse versions of Superman that I've literally ever read in my life.
You read Dark Knight 2?
Oh, Red?
Dark Knight 2. Yes. Ooh. So the only worst version is Frank Miller in Dark Knight 2. And that's the worst version of that's the worst version I've ever seen of Batman and of Superman.
I was about to ask
if it was both.
All-star Batman.
That's still Frank Miller. That's still Frank Miller Batman. It's literally the same character. Frank Miller has misunderstood those two characters the most of anyone, which is amazing because in 1986 he clearly understood them on a fundamental level. But here we are.
Glazer, I'm the goddamn Batman.
All right. Since we're talking about terrible people with shit that's way too dark, The Boys season 2.
Is anybody else all caught up? There's five episodes.
Oh, I'm not. I'm not watching. Carla keeps making noises about wanting to, and I keep telling her it's serialized, and we'll watch when it's done, and I'm hoping she just forgets.
Yeah. Like, on the one hand, I do like that they are releasing it weekly right now to kind of build that hype and get people on the same page to discuss. But if I'm the only one watching it, then I might not delve in too much till the whole thing is done. Yeah,
we'll talk when it's done, and then maybe I'll binge it.
I will just say that part of the big setup here is they have
a Nazi
gender swapped. Well, Stormfront from the comics, who is like the number two. He's Shazam, right?
Yeah, Nazi Shazam. So, like,
yes, literal Nazi in the comic books. And they have gender swapped her now. I should clarify, Stormfront is a guy in the comics. It is a girl in the show. And that has changed a lot of dynamics. And I don't know how far they're going to go into the whole Nazi thing, or if she's just like generically racist, which they've also really spent some time kind of.
I just can't
fly under the radar. I don't know. It's really way out in left field, which. Like, sorry, the show as a whole is kind of out in left field, which is kind of a plus for being based on an Ennis book. Like, one season is really about all I feel you can get out of Ennis.
Did you watch Preacher?
I did not. Preacher is one that, because I didn't read it until it was done, and I read trades, and I just sat down and I read like the whole friggin' series in a week, man. I was so tired of Ennis's style by the end of that. I just didn't have the heart to try and watch the show.
Fair enough. Preacher, I didn't watch much of, but did a really good job. Like, it started out completely terrible. They spent forever in the town that just blows up in the first issue of the comic. So yeah. They spent like half a season or the first season in that town just for it to blow up at the end. Like, everyone who read the comic knew it was going to. So that was terrible. So I was going to try and watch it when I got there. But a lot of the stuff later ended up, like, they didn't actually follow the comic, but ended up reasonably well done. Like, it was campy and silly and completely ridiculous, much like Preacher should be. Mm-hmm. I feel like The Boys feels like it's saying something sometimes, and it's not.
Well, Garth Ennis has been saying the same thing about superheroes, like, over and over and over.
Yeah. You know what was fun, though? His issue of Punisher, where Punisher beats up Wolverine.
What about his issue? What about his issue of Punisher, where he forces Daredevil to pull a trigger on a gun? Like, it's like I've read the same stupid Garth Ennis story about superheroes sucking and being too childish and their morality being too simplistic, like, a billion times. Right? Look, I read Hitman, which is what The Boys are, except with not set in the DC universe. Like, I just don't need it. Like, my day rate for having to read fucking Garth Ennis adaptations is so much higher than what the white book / props and slops can afford. Like, I have no patience for Garth Ennis and his shtick. Like,
I don't read any of his stuff anymore. I hadn't touched any, honestly, in years until year before, something like that. I saw The Boys was on Comixology Unlimited, and folks used to rave about it. So I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. And I sat down and I read it, and I mean, I didn't love it. It's the same thing I've had with basically everything of his I've read. The first, one to two trades worth of stuff, it feels interesting and maybe a bit of a neat take. But then he just, like, he's got the same, like, half a dozen tropes and witty things he thinks he's saying in between all the same friggin' dick jokes that it just gets so unbearably old so fast.
I mean, does that basically cover The Boys season two for now? Let's do Blue's Brothers.
Yep. I don't think the many people who love The Boys will appreciate that specific take. Well,
that was more about the comics than the show. We'll see how the show goes. Bruise Brothers.
Same. Is this about beer?
It is. You guys probably know that I really loved the show The League, which was nominally about a fantasy football league, but it really wasn't. It was instead a semi-scripted show of comedians giving each other a whole lot of shit. Bruise Brothers is somewhat similar, brought to you by some of the same producers, I believe. And it is nominally about a craft brewery starting up in L.A., but it is really not. It is really about a bunch of comedians giving each other shit, at least one of which was that makes a couple appearances was a character in the league. It's only eight episodes long for the first season. It's on Netflix, 25-minute episodes, whatever they are. I think it's pretty hilarious, but it does take that certain angle of crude humor. So, like, it's not The Good Place, right? So be prepared with what you're getting into.
All right.
Okay. Well, so I listened to the Sandman audiobook. They got a bunch of big names. I didn't actually bother to look up who any of them were. No, the first volume for $30 is the first three trades. So yeah, in about a 5-hour drive, because we went to a wedding last weekend, we listened to basically all of, I believe the first book is called Preludes and Nocturnes.
Yeah. That goes up to the serial killer convention.
It goes, right before the serial killer convention. It ends at the meeting of death. Okay. Like, the very first death single issue is the last book of the trade, I'm pretty sure. I got it for Carla like 3 years ago, and she read the comics, and she really liked them. It's very up her alley. I also absolutely adore Sandman.
The Dr. Destiny stuff?
Yeah, all of it. Everything. He meets Martian Man, the whole thing, the whole shebang, everything.
It's all the original stuff. Okay.
Correct. It is fantastically well done. I absolutely love it, and it's reignited my love for the source material. I strongly recommend it. Carla is very annoyed that there is no good or any TV show, cartoon, anything of the Sandman. There was what?
Netflix, right? With Netflix, right?
Yeah, they said they were going to, but they didn't, right?
I think the deal is still there.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully at some point, because it is truly excellent. It's also like, much like Garth Ennis, Neil Gaiman has one thing he really likes to tell us about over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I will listen to that out of Gaiman.
I'm a little bit over Gaiman fetishizing stories, but Sandman was still the first time he did that in long form, and I'll always have a special place in my heart for it.
Right.
It also helped get me back into comics.
But it's the same thing as Garth Ennis is like Hellblazer, yes, right? Like, that's the first time he did that shit.
Like, yeah, that's reasonable. But, like, also, Gaiman is fundamentally optimistic and seems like a genuinely kind and thoughtful person, and that helps. That helps me.
I think that's part of the issue. Like, Gaiman's trope, as you said there, or the thing he keeps hammering on, is love of stories, right? So, like, he loves the thing he's creating and the medium he's creating it in. And he just tells that same love story over and over effectively. Mm-hmm. And if Ennis, however, is just nothing but like self-loathing, all he does is tell the story about how he hates what he does over and over. Like, why would I want to subject myself to that?
That's reasonable. Well, if you want to subject yourself to something really, really good. And the first trade of Sandman genuinely has super creepy parts.
It does.
Oh yeah, like wildly creepy stuff. Like I forgot how
creepy it was. Horror originally, right?
Yeah, it was. It was originally going to be a horror book, and then he slowly shifts it into being what he always writes about because that's what he's interested in. But he sold it to DC as a horror book. But like some of the parts, like, are super, super like icky and creepy. Like the 24 hours in the diner with Dr. Destiny is just genuinely like, the whole time, like, I'm cringing, like, oh.
I can imagine that's particularly bad, like, as an audio.
Yeah, and just explain and all the, like, narration. And he's doing, Gaiman himself, I believe, narrates. And, like, it's just, it's a lot. However, the issue where he goes to hell is completely phenomenal.
It's one of the strongest issues of the original comic. I mean, like,
that's the thing you can say about 5,000 different issues, though, right?
I mean, I don't know. I'm a big believer that I actually think Neil Gaiman's core narratives are always stronger than his, like, meandering love of stories. Like, I think Preludes and Nocturnes, Seasons of Mist,
Brief Lives is my favorite by far. Brief Lives like breaks my heart every time.
Yes, Brief Lives is up there. A Game of You, and then Kindly Ones is like that core storyline that's actually about Morpheus is actually really fantastic story. I can take or leave a lot of the like meandering, like the love of stories is this. And
the only one I don't like, I really don't like the one that starts with the serial killer convention. I believe a Doll's House. I really don't. I don't need a Doll's House at all. It's the only one I've only read once because I read it. I don't remember it super well anymore. I just remember it being like unnecessarily icky.
Yeah, and it does set up stuff in a game for you, which
a game of you,
game of you, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Which sets up some stuff.
Look, I read it. I'm not.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. The one I skipped. To be honest with you, when the last time I reread Sandman, I skipped Dream Country. I'm looking at the trades right now. I skipped Dream Country. I skipped Fables and Reflections.
Oh,
I skipped World's End.
I don't like every short story. Oops, sorry.
Oh, I was just saying Dream Country has the Shakespeare one, the Midsummer Nights.
They both have both two of them do. One has Midsummer Nights and one has The Tempest. I actually really love The Tempest one.
Yeah. I read that once.
It convinced me to like The Tempest, which has always been, which was to that point my least favorite book, Shakespeare book. I'm a very big fan of it. I don't love every short story in those books, but the ones that hit for me really hit. Like, I love the Kitty one. The Kitty one is fantastic. The
Kitty one is very good, yeah.
Like, there's a few that I really, really like. I really enjoy Hob as a character, even if I don't like always like his issues. But like, I don't know. I think it's one of the better complete comic series I've ever read.
It definitely is. Like, I think, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I could reread it from beginning to end. I mean, I own three of the Absolute editions somewhere in my parents' house I'm currently living in.
The recoloring of those early.
Like, I just don't know. Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, I've read some like critical reappraisals of this, like. Some of the themes that Gaiman touches on are very like 80s and early 90s and aren't never necessarily like aged well. So I don't know. I have complex feelings. I mean, I have complex feelings towards Neil Gaiman in general. Like, I've over time really come to sour on him, not to the point in which I'm at like with Garth Ennis, where I'm just utterly dismissive of the man's body of work entirely.
I very rarely think of him anymore. I really like Sandman, and most of the rest of his career is just existence. I like Neverwhere. I like Never. I don't love America. I like Neverwhere, and I really, really love Stardust.
Yes.
Stardust. Although I like the movie Stardust better than the book Stardust.
The book Stardust.
I like both, but the movie is really, really good.
Movie's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I like both a lot, but I like the movie better. The movie more than the book has a little Princess Bride feel to it, and Princess Bride is like my favorite thing in the world. So
weirdly, his 1609, right? Is that?
Yeah, I did not like that.
It's stupid. It's something I actually really didn't like when it came out, and then when I read it 5 or 6 years later, I actually came to really enjoy it. Reading it as a whole experience rather than like by as individual issues. Obviously, I could take or leave all the spinoffs, but when I read the whole mini series, I was like, oh, he actually kind of has something he wants to say about this. Okay. There's actually some there, which it didn't feel like when you were reading these like super delayed issues. I mean, the other thing about Neil Gaiman's comic book, I mean, work, like, didn't he recently do another Sandman series? I remember I read one issue of it.
He did. I read the exact same one issue and was like, I would probably like this, but I did not have patience to wait for it to come out. And I was like, I'll read it in collection. And then I never got around to it.
Oh, there's apparently it's Overture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called. Okay.
But also, that's not Dream, right? Like, I mean, it's Dream, but it's not Dream. So I was like,
yeah. I mean, it's Dream, but it's not Dream. That's one of the best things about the...
Yeah, but I don't know if I want stories about Daniel, right? Like, yeah. I was happy with... Fundamentally
different. I think Daniel's a cool character. I wish they had actually...
Me too. Oh, I don't. I liked it being like... I like, again, the openness of stories. Yeah, whatever. Gaming, yada, yada. But either way, like, heavy duty props for the audiobook.
Did they actually? Yeah. Did Daniel actually show up in Carrie's Lucifer? Delirium and Death.
I think he shows up towards the end as just like he's there, but he doesn't really do much.
Yeah, doesn't Lucifer have to like retrieve something from him to get his wings back? Maybe.
I thought it was Destiny that he had to go to.
Maybe. Yeah, it's been too long.
I would assume he had to be with many of the Endless.
My trades are around in this house somewhere, and I will find
them. That is another good one.
And reread them.
Those kind of like bookend the like classic Vertigo era to me, Sandman to Lucifer.
Yeah, I mean, like I think Lucifer is a really deserving follow-up series. It plays with some of the themes that Gaiman plays with, but is interested in some fundamentally different concepts. So I think it's actually like a really good way to play in someone else's universe with a respect for the characters, but also bringing like your own preoccupations, right? Mike Carey's interested in different things than Neil Gaiman's interested in. So
Yes. I don't always love Carey's superheroes, but I like Carey's non-superhero stuff a lot.
Yeah, superhero stuff is. I guess X-Men stuff is like take it or leave it. Like
I just don't need that much. Like I don't like Professor X.
Yeah, that's true. The guy who did Captain America, Brubaker, right? Didn't they do it together?
I don't know.
Yeah, I do not know either.
He was on, but Carey was on X-Men for a long time. That's another thing. I was always surprised when I was like, Mike Carey's still on X-Men? Yeah, where did we start off with?
We're on to play, I think, right?
Cool. I want to talk just a little bit to mention to our listeners, if you have not heard, Microsoft bought Bethesda, the makers of Skyrim and Fallout and Doom and Elder Scrolls Legends, the card game, and the MMO, and
lots of other crap.
Yeah. Well, lots of like subsidiary studios like Arcane, right? Also, Dishonored Games through.
Oh yeah, Dishonored Games is them, yeah. Which means that, and they're this. I mean, they're probably at this point, and I know this matters to Glazer because he's a lover of the role playing game genre. It's a consolidation of probably the two of the three most important brands in mainstream Western role-playing games are now consolidated under Microsoft, with BioWare being the odd person out.
Which means if PlayStation is smart, they double down on JRPGs.
Yeah, well, they already announced that FF16 is exclusive, right?
Yeah. Well, they didn't announce it. They soft announced it.
Well, okay. Well,
I think they basically... said that it's going to come out like a year later.
Okay.
Well, like, or 2 years later on the Xbox. So
that's reasonable.
I think in the West, this proves that you can't really carry a console on the back of JRPGs.
We don't know that.
I mean, the PS4, like in the last generation, Sony made some pretty aggressive plays to get some Western games exclusive to their...
Yeah, but the PS3 was when the only console generation they lost, and they were like, no PS3 JRPGs.
That's fair. I mean, look, I'm going to buy a PS5. I will not play the next Final Fantasy VII remake. I will not play the next Trails of Cold Steel game or whatever it's called, Legends of Heroes game. Cold Steel 4 comes out next month. Hey-o!
I wish I could figure out how many units WRPG sold. I can find out how many JRPGs sold.
But like if you look at the Switch, which is in many ways a lot of its sales are powered by its non- core Nintendo sales are powered by JRPGs. It's still a firm third place.
I mean, yeah.
Like, I just think that in the West, you can't. I mean, in Japan, obviously, you can sell a billion units that way. But I think it's really interesting for the future of the American role-playing genre that Obsidian and Bethesda are owned by Microsoft. And whether or not.
Oh, very, very much so. We I'm might not saying see- it's not interesting, but.
I mean,
it's big news.
One thing that didn't get mentioned that I think it is interesting to me anyway is the dollar amount of this sale. $7.5 billion. Holy crap.
Like, well, when you think about how much money Skyrim made, though, Microsoft clearly is looking for whatever the next Elder Scrolls game is. They did announce Elder Scrolls 6, right?
Maybe, not sure. I've never actually gotten into the Elder Scroll games, so I have not paid much attention to them.
I was a sucker for Morrowind. I was never very good at Morrowind. I never completed Morrowind, but I enjoyed it. I really did not like Skyrim. Like, I'm very famous for not liking Skyrim at all. And I think that I enjoyed Fallout 3, but not a huge amount, because it really, at the end of the day, was just a reskin of Skyrim. And that, or that's, it had the same design principles as Skyrim. Or not even Skyrim, it was Oblivion. Had the same design principles as Oblivion. And then Skyrim just took those one step further. And then Fallout 4 was just a reskin of that. It's just, Bethesda's just not a very innovative role-playing game designer anymore. Like, they keep making their games prettier. And they keep making their worlds, like the scenery, more reactive. But they're just not very good storytellers. And if you played one Elder Scrolls / Fallout game, you've basically played all of them, because they really go back to the same tropes, and they don't even put new spins on them.
So is it fair to call Elder Scrolls the biggest WRPG series?
I would have said that until Witcher 3, which dang. Blew up. Like
series, not single thing.
Well, but it's...
So there are three Witcher games.
So even if since 1994, Elder Scrolls has sold 60 million, 59.5 million units.
How does it compare to Mass Effect?
Let's find out. Because I found Dragon Quest is 81 million in its whole run, but that's since like 88. So I think that's reasonably comparable. Mass Effect is only 20 million.
That's only three games?
Yeah.
But Elder Scrolls what about the Ultima games?
No, Elder Scrolls is six.
For umpteen years, the Ultima games, I definitely held that title.
I don't know. I don't have... Ultima does not break the 20 million sold.
Yeah, it's the next one will be six. So Skyrim was the fifth.
So Ultima does not break 20 million units sold. It's not on this list.
I mean, Ultima is...
No, the lowest, I guess, a couple of things. It goes down to at least 10 million copies that I can find. So if you want me to look up anything, Wikipedia has that.
How does Witcher 3 compare to Skyrim?
It won't give me Witcher 3. It won't give me that. I'm on series.
Ah. Well, how does the Witcher series compare? Is it on there?
Witcher is 50 million. Wow. That is a blow up. Like, Witcher is only since 2007, so Witcher might be the single biggest. Which company is Witcher?
CD Projekt Red. They have a big game coming out in November.
That's a different company, right?
It's a different company than Bethesda, yes.
Yeah, it's not under the banner of any of the others, but it will also likely be multi-platform.
Yes, it is going to be multi-platform.
Okay. Yeah. By the way, shocking no one, what's number one?
Like, RPG series?
No, this is everything.
Oh, everything?
Myst.
No, what?
Mario?
It's Mario. Number two might be hard, though.
Zelda?
Oh. Sonic?
No.
Wait, it says Mario and Super Mario separated? That's ridiculous.
Is it...
That's cheating.
Is it 2K?
Nope. 2K is really, really high. It's a puzzle game.
Tetris? Anyway, I think that it will be... I'm just very interested in this new era of Western role-playing games with Microsoft kind of cornering the market.
Well, again, only sort of.
I mean, again, like CD Projekt Red's its own thing. Like, they're their own, and they're also PC focused even more than than they are console.
Things I didn't know. Tom Clancy at 82 million.
Oh, you have to think about all the different stupid Tom Clancy games, like Rainbow Six.
I've never paid attention to a single one of those.
I guess you are. You're what? 4 years older than I am, right, Glazer?
Yeah.
So you were just like maybe too old for Rainbow Six to be like. Yeah,
I knew it existed, but like Tom Clancy's whole games have sold a million more than Dragon Quest games, which is just important to me. It's the only thing anywhere near the top that like is a surprise to me.
Yeah, you just missed the Rainbow Six moment.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Monster Hunter is a mild surprise, but it's right?
Japanese love Monster Hunter.
Yeah, I've heard.
And then World also broke out, right? That's the newest one?
Well, and the DS was such a... the PSP was such a big console. We used to be building the PSP of you.
Anyway, now we're like super in the weeds. So let's talk a little bit about Magic. So, Will, have you played any Return to Zendikar?
Oh, yeah, it is the second time we've gone back. I actually forgot about the middle Zendikar set. I have played not nearly as much as you guys, just two drafts so far. I'm hoping by the end of the week it's many more.
I'm in love with Zendikar.
Yeah, I think it's a really good limited set. I mean, it just continues to show that... the Magic play designers and set designers are really good at making limited sets now. Like, even, like, I didn't super like M21, but it was still playable. Like, it was still, you know, baseline, willing to log on and play with Aaron when I had some free time. It didn't make me, like, want to amazingly play it like Ikoria did, or like Zendikar does, or Theros. I really enjoyed Theros. But it was still playable. And I think that it's a really impressive thing that they're able to consistently produce different feeling sets too, right, Glazer? Because this doesn't feel anything like Ikoria, right? Or even...
It feels like its own completely different set. I don't know. I've got 9 modal double-faced lands waiting for me. That's all I know. Well,
can we just talk about those? Like, the fact that that has not been done before sort of kills me. I love the double land spells. If that doesn't become an evergreen mechanic, I'm going to be crushed. That just smooths out so much of the feel of the game. It doesn't address all of my mana screw issues, but it noticeably combats them.
Yeah, I'm almost never screwed. I flooded still a little bit because you can just accidentally draw like a bunch of regular lands, right? Like, you still have to run like 10 or 11 regular lands, and if you just hit those in the wrong order, like, so be it. But like, I used to get screwed all the time. I would either scrud or flew. Scrud or flew. Great.
Wow.
Scrud or flood. Yeah, screw or flood. Like, an absurd amount, to the point where like it became a like, I'd be like, it happens all the time, and then everyone would be like, no, this is variance magic, and then people would play with me a few times and be like, oh no, it really does seem to like you have amazingly terrible luck with this. And it's like, yeah, I'm aware, thanks.
The joke was with Clemens and I that landfall is the perfectly designed mechanic for Aaron Glazer, because he always draws so many lands.
So far this set has done that. It's a really hard set to be good at, though. So if you're a total magic noob, like, it's probably not the set to start with.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a learning curve, because the modal double face cards, MDFCs, are very complex cards. They're really cool designs. I mean, the crazy thing is we're getting almost an entire Magic year of modal double face cards. Modal double face cards are going to be a minor theme in the next set about the Viking world.
Sure.
And then the Harry Potter knockoff world, Strixhaven or Strixhaven or whatever it's called.
Oh, I guess I didn't look at that one. I didn't even know that was coming.
That's the key theme, right? Like if you listen to Mike Rosewater's podcast, I think also the article he wrote about Zendikar, he mentions this. He said that originally they were designed for that set, the Harry Potter Magic School set. And it ended up being successful. And they were like, well, how can we spread this out through a whole year to create like more consistency across standard environments? So it's not just like you only get adventure cards in one set and you never see any more adventure cards. So like with Eldraine. So they've made like, it's a moderate theme in Zendikar, a major theme in the Wizard set, and a minor theme in the
So the modal cards then Do we know if they are the same style, like the land spell?
They're different design spaces. But we will be getting a full cycle of all the pathways. So we'll get all the white ones. The pathways, the non-tap land ones. So, like, there's the red-blue one that there are lands on both sides.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're going to get a full cycle of those at rare.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm 100% down for this.
Yeah, I'm really interested. I think, you know, Standard has some problems right now. Obviously, if you follow Standard, Glazer bought two games of my Standard today. One was a good game.
But that deck that I keep hearing about is the dumbest damn thing in the world.
Yeah, and then there's this Omnath deck that's floating around that may get banned on Monday. By the time you hear this on Friday, it may be banned in a couple of days. But other than that, I think Standard is set up for a really interesting year, I think, actually.
I'll never be quite degenerate enough for this to matter. Every time I look at a Standard game, they do something like crazy, right? Like, the Standard seems to never go more than like a month or so without breaking.
Yeah, I mean, they're really pushing the power level.
Yeah, I have very little interest, but do people enjoy it? More power to them.
I mean, I love Constructed. It's my preferred format, so.
I prefer Draft.
Yeah.
I enjoy Draft
these days.
I enjoy Draft, but like, I like the Constructed synergies. I like thinking about like fixed metagames and trying to find answers to those fixed metagames in a way that Draft, you can know the metagame for Draft, but I know that red is the best color, but you can just not open good red cards and not open the cards necessary to counter the red strategies, right? Unlike Constructed format where you could be like, red's best, so let's play decks that beat red or figure out how to game.
That's reasonable.
Yeah, I'm not saying, you know, I love Draft. Like, I really enjoy it, but I prefer Constructed. Anyway, real quick, Among Us, right? Glazer refuses to play it. Will, have you played any Among Us yet?
I have not. I'm not even really sure. I haven't taken the time to look into it. So give me the lowdown.
It's basically off-brand Werewolf.
Oh, okay. Now I'm in.
So you're broken into two sides. There's imposters, which is one or two people, and it's their job to kill the crew members before they figure out who the imposters are. And the crew can win by either A, figuring out who the imposters are, or run around the spaceship and do different tasks, which are mostly just like crappy mini games that you do. And then if someone dies and that body gets found, you can call a meeting. And then if you're playing over Discord, which is the best way to play, or Skype or whatever, or Zoom or whatever, you can, you talk about it and then you vote somebody off. And that's the fun of it. It's like I played with some Thronesers. Our wayward co-host Kyle Vansel is a big Amonger. He likes the Kyle's been playing like a storm. On Friday I was playing, and that was in the midst of all of this nonsense and that's been going on politically and all the sad news, and it was really, really relaxing. So I would definitely say Among Us is one of the best things that has happened in 2020 is people discovering it, because it's an older game. It's a couple years old.
You know what's lovely about 2020? Soon it'll be hindsight, just like this episode.
This is the first time I think on the podcast that Carla has.
Yeah, I'm trying to get her to on the bike.
Yeah.
So my wife is on a. I got my wife a Peloton. I guess I got brought Peloton. But this lady cost me a fucking arm and a leg.
Yeah.
And she, it's right next to my computer chair. So she's on it and she's pedaling away, pedaling her heart of its content. Roy gets to laugh at her regularly as we play.
No, I don't laugh at it anymore now that I know what it is in context. The very time I heard it, I thought it was the most hilarious thing I've ever heard. It was me and Clemens, by the way, on the same call. And we were both like, you like muted to go to the bathroom. And we were both like, what the hell was that?
Well, I didn't mute to go to the bathroom. I just dropped the headphones. Oh. That's why you could hear.